This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Join us now for a look at the world's most fascinating subject, celebrities, political figures, and everyday folks with amazing stories to tell. That's People Magazine, coming up next on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is People Magazine. I'm your reader, Mickey Cooney, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading the April 22nd issue of People Magazine, and I will begin with a People's exclusive interview, Judi Dench, All the World's Her Stage. The Queen of Shakespeare reveals why she prefers theater to film and how life turns into art. She's quoted saying, "No one who hasn't been in love can ever play Juliet," by Liz Schumer. Before she became the villainous M to James Bond, before Hollywood crowned her Queen Victoria, and before she was awarded Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire for her services to acting, a teenage Judi Dench fell in love with the musical language of one of history's most celebrated playwrights. "Shakespeare is my passion," says Dame Judi Dench, who is 89 years old. "It used to be 9 pence to go to an Old Vic and sit in the gallery, so we used to go and see Richard Burton and John Neville. This was before the Beatles, so people used to just go mad. I never thought for one single second I would be part of this as my first job." Now, almost 70 years after she made her stage debut, there is Hamlet's Ophelia, the British acting icon is taking readers down memory lane. Written as a series of conversations with fellow actor and friend Brendan O'Hay, her new book, Shakespeare, The Man Who Pays the Rent, is a rollicking look back at Dench's life, career, and turn on the boards in more than 40 plays with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Dench didn't originally set out to be an actor. She trained as a set designer, but after a 1953 visit to Shakespeare's hometown, she set her sights on performing. The rest is decades of stage and screen history, but her heart will always belong to the Bard. "There is something about his rhythms that just catch you like music," she says. "It's in iambic pentameter, which I've always said is the rhythm of your heart." The RSC kicked off Dench's career, and it also brought her and her husband, actor Michael Mikey Leonard Williams, together. They married in 1971, welcomed a daughter, actress Finty Williams, in 1972, and remained married until his death from lung cancer in 2001 at age 65. Dench has been with her partner David Mills since 2010. Both on stage and off, Dench has a mischievous side that once led her grandson, Sammy, who's now 26, to call her the most childish person he knows. She recounts backstage sneezing competitions, playing pranks on co-stars, and jumping out from hiding spots, her specialty. She says all of that is essential to working out nerves or letting the froth of the beer go before going on stage. But her life experience also serves a major role in nailing certain complex characters. "You can only play a part if you understand the extent of the emotion that the person is feeling," she says. "If you've never ever been in love, well, you're not ever going to play Juliet, are you? Or Cleopatra? Or actually anybody?" Dench, who says she prefers the stage to the screen, thrives on the audience feedback that comes with making a play. "It's never the same twice. Some nights you can hit the spot you want to, and it resonates with an audience. And the next night you try and do the same thing and you completely miss it," she says. Though the stage is her first love, she enjoys the sense of conviviality that can be found on location for a film. After leaving the set of a 1997 film, Mrs. Brown, which filmed in Scotland, she and the cast would stay in the pub until the wee hours while Billy Connolly, who played John Brown, regaled them with stories. "But while working on the Bond films," she says, "I would go in and I would do the day's filming, but then I wasn't part of the rest, so it's very different in feeling." Now that she's on the cusp of turning 90, Dench, who has carpe diem, or what she defines as savor the day, tattooed on her inner wrist, tries to stay in the present. Because of macular degeneration, her eyesight is no longer good enough to read scripts, which presents a barrier to taking on new projects. If you were to ask me to do Shakespeare's Twelfth Night now, I could do that, or Macbeth, probably, she says, but I can't learn a new part because I've also found out that I have to know where it is on the page, and being able to see it and being able to learn it is one thing, but I have to know exactly where it is, and that is not something I am able to overcome. But Dench, who briskly moves on to the next topic with a signature yes, well, doesn't like to dwell. She continues to draw and paint, and her own doodles are sprinkled throughout the book, in part to inspire others with limited vision to try their hand at the same. She hopes the book makes the bard seem more approachable, too. If she can do that, she says, it'll be very good. An excerpt to Discovering the Bard, a young Judy feels the magic at Shakespeare's birthplace. My parents took me to Stratford-upon-Avon, William Shakespeare's birthplace, in 1953, when I was 18 years old, to see Michael Redgrave in King Lear, and I had one of those Damascene moments. Up until then, I had always dreamed of being a theater designer, but when I saw Robert Colquhoun's Lear set, I realized that I would never be able to come up with something as imaginative. It was so spare and perfect. It looked like a great big papadom with a large rock in the middle, which, when it turned, could reveal the throne, a bed, or even a cave. Nothing was held up for a scene change. It was all there in front of you, like a big box of tricks waiting to be unveiled. We stayed overnight in Stratford, and the following afternoon my parents and I sat across from the theater on the other side of the river. It was the summer, and the theater doors and windows were all open, and we heard the matinee over the tannoy and watched the actors running up and down the stairs to their dressing rooms. Little did I know that within 10 years I'd be stepping on that stage to play Titania. The next article is entitled Walton Goggins Finally Taking the Lead. After 34 years as that guy you know from something, the Southern Gentleman is ready for household name fame, by Gillian Telling. Given the delightfully unusual name, plus a 34-year career that includes shows like The Shield, Justified, and The Righteous Gemstones, you'd think everyone would already know who Walton Goggins is. I stepped on the street a lot, but it's always, hey, you're that guy, he says with a laugh, added that his fans span generations. I have the 30-year-olds that know me from Major League, Back to the Minors, or Shanghai Noon, but even if they recognize me, they still get my name wrong. It's usually, I love your work, Walter Scriggins. That's certainly about to change. Goggins, who is 52, is starring in Prime Video's post-apocalyptic drama series Fallout, premiering April 12th, based on the popular video game. He plays a noseless bounty hunter named Ghoul, and to achieve the character's sexy ghoul look, he endured 2 hours in the makeup chair each day. It was uncomfortable, he admits, of the prosthetics. It was so hot in New York, where we filmed, sweat would be coming out of my eyes. Next, the father of one stars in the third season of HBO's acclaimed drama The White Lotus, though he can reveal nothing about his character. It's currently filming in Thailand, he says. That's all I can say. Fallout Season 2 may be next, and while Goggins is busier than ever, he's here for it. I've been working with so many amazing people, he says. It's exciting times. Goggins knew from a young age that acting could be a prospective career. I grew up in a tiny house with my mom in Georgia, raised mostly by women, her sisters, my grandmother, and her friends, he says, of unconventional upbringing. My mom had a job with the state, but was extremely esoteric in her thinking, and her friends were amazing. Everyone was poor and hippies and living these strange lives. He recalls some of his favorite babysitters. They'd play hide-and-seek with me, but they called it hide-and-freak-out. They'd say, Walton, we're going to drop acid and try to find you, and when we do, you freak out on us. He adds, my childhood was great. It was so colorful. When he was 6, Goggins saw his aunt and uncle perform in regional theater and was blown away. They were on the stage just pretending to be other people, he says, and they got applause, and I thought, wow, they were just playing pretend and somehow moved these people. So that was always in the back of my head. At 13, he decided to lean in. I found out the name of a person who cast all the movies in Atlanta and asked my mom to drive me out there without an appointment. Eventually, the person was like, whatever, this kid isn't going anywhere. So she met me. Long story short, she ended up being my mentor. After 2 years at Georgia Southern University, Goggins moved to Los Angeles to act full-time. This was 1991. No cell phones, but I got a couple of meetings, signed with small agency, and pretty much began working, he says. The roles were small to start, bit parts on Beverly Hills 90210 and JAG, but grew to include films like Django Unchained, Lincoln, and The Hateful Eight. And while he still can't believe he gets to do this for a living, he says he's also thrilled when a job wraps up so he can travel. As soon as I'm done, I'm like, let's hit the road, man, he says, of the globetrotting with his wife, director and screenwriter Nadia Connors, and their son Mark, who's 13. I don't know how to be still. These days, he says, getting to combine acting with his travel is the best of both worlds. If you've been in the business as long as I have, chances are you'll already be friends with someone on your next project, he says. To be in some exotic location with good people, having precious conversations about family and life, I wake up daily and with gratitude. There's not a single experience I've had where I'm not acutely aware of how fortunate I am and really how special this is. The next article, also a People's exclusive, Carney Wilson, I Feel So Good Now. After decades of struggling with her weight, the singer has sworn off sugar, lost 45 pounds, and is launching a cooking show. My body's thanking me, she says, by Dana Rose Falcone. A few weeks ago, Carney Wilson baked an Insta-worthy Oreo cake, garnished with cookies and whipped cream and dripping with a chocolate glaze. After proudly posting a picture of the finished project, she declined to indulge in it. I still love to make decadent things, but I'm not tempted anymore. Now I have control. For years, sugar had the upper hand. It was my kryptonite, says Wilson, who's 55. It took over me. Since stepping into the spotlight in the 90s with the Grammy-nominated trio Wilson Phillips, Wilson has struggled personally and publicly with weight, even after gastric bypass surgery in 1999 and lap band surgery more than a decade ago. But in September, the Hold On singer gave up sugar and gluten, and since then she's lost 45 pounds and gained a healthier relationship with food, which she celebrates on her new cooking show, Sounds Delicious, premiering April 16th on AXS TV. I feel so much better, she says. I treat my body with respect now. As the daughter of Beach Boys co-founder Brian Wilson and singer Marilyn Wilson Rutherford, she says, I didn't grow up eating dinner around the table. That wasn't my childhood. Although she developed a love for cooking while making matzo ball soup and chocolate chip cookies with her grandmother, food became a crutch and, she says, an addiction. I have eaten to stuff down emotions. I eat when I'm happy, bored, anxious, annoyed, angry, frustrated, or sad. I will find an excuse, says Wilson, who has also faced alcohol and drug addiction in her past and still participates in a recovery program. Food will always be emotional for me. Wilson decided to make a change after she reached 240 pounds and was experiencing gastrointestinal distress and joint pain. There was a voice going, you've got to change the way you eat. You don't have a choice anymore. It's for your health. After Wilson learned that her cholesterol was high and that she was close to being diabetic, her doctors suggested trying a weight loss drug like Ozempic to curb her appetite, but the potential side effects scared her, she says. Instead, she opted to eliminate sugar and gluten, which she thinks contributed to digestion issues. It was hard at first, but now I love it. A typical breakfast these days might be cottage cheese and blueberries with a few nuts on the side and two slices of turkey bacon. Favorite snacks include cheese sticks, hard-boiled eggs, and carrots. It's a world of difference. I don't wake up going, what am I going to eat today, she says. I'm like, what do I get to put in my body that feels great instead? Wilson brings that sense of excitement as host of Sounds Delicious, where she cooks lasagna, chicken parmesan, and chocolate cupcakes with guests like John Stamos, Lisa Loeb, and Twisted Sisters Dee Snider. In the kitchen, she says, I found my zone. Her cooking cred includes winning Chopped in 2013, guest judging on Beat Bobby Flay, and owning an obnoxious number of cookbooks, at least 1,400 by last count. Cooking makes me feel centered and purposeful, she says. At home, Wilson's lifestyle changes have rubbed off on her family, including her husband, guitarist Rob Bonfiglio, who's 56, who lost 12 pounds after he also gave up sugar. He said, I feel less self-conscious, and I'm like, honey, you were never fat, Wilson says, but he told her, I feel better about myself. Says Wilson, that's what it's about. Even if she doesn't indulge, Wilson still enjoys cooking for her daughters Lola, who's 19, and Lucy, who's 14, both of whom are following in their parents' footsteps with a love of music. Lola, a college student, often sings with Wilson on stage while Lucy plays the cello. I love serving people and watching them eat, Wilson says. It's an act of love and self-love. She also pours that love into the mac and cheese and steak dinner she brings to her dad, who's now 81, who has been diagnosed with dementia. He's safe and comfortable and doing well, she says of the pop music legend, who still loves watching Laker games and dining at his favorite LA restaurants. He's living in so much gratitude, and although he was largely absent from her childhood, she says, we've had a lot of healing as father and daughter. By the end of this year, Wilson hopes to reach a goal weight of 170 pounds, and she aims to add exercise and more water to her daily routine. But the singer has been on her health journey long enough to give herself some grace. I'm not a health fanatic freakazoid, she says. She still puts creamer in her coffee, and when she gets a late-night craving, she'll have a small handful of Cheeto Puffs or potato chips. I allow myself that, she says. If she doesn't reach her goal on the scale, she says, I'll continue what I'm doing. Life throws a lot of stuff at you. I try to remain positive. This time, she says, it's not a promise to anyone. It's not a show. I've been through all of it, and this is not for anyone except for me and my well-being. And I do feel happy and really grateful. The next article is entitled, Mystery in the Caribbean. A woman aboard a luxury yacht vanishes in the night. Hoping to start a new life with a new love, Sarm Heslop moved to the island of St. John, and then she disappeared, by Samira Asma Sadek. After years of traveling the world, former flight attendant Sarm Heslop was settling on her latest adventure as a host of luxury yacht cruises in the Caribbean. On March 7th of 2021, the 41-year-old British citizen texted friends to say she had successfully completed the first cruise she and her American boyfriend, Ryan Bain, who was then 44, had operated for paying customers on Bain's 47-foot catamaran Siren Song in St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands. She said they just finished their charter, and it was really hard work, but it was a great day, says Kate Vernella, Heslop's best friend and former housemate in the UK. After a celebratory meal at a bar in the port of Cruz Bay, the exhausted couple returned to their yacht for the night, leaving just in time for the island's COVID pandemic curfew at 10 p.m. Within hours, however, Heslop's new life on the Caribbean ended abruptly. In the middle of the night, an alarm sounded aboard the boat, waking Bain from a deep sleep. He later told police it was 2 a.m. and Heslop was nowhere to be seen. Bain immediately informed island police and, after being told to contact other authorities, called the U.S. Coast Guard before noon that day to report his girlfriend's sudden disappearance. But when officials arrived at the boat that afternoon, Bain appeared heavily intoxicated and agitated, according to a Coast Guard report. He told them that Heslop's passport, wallet, and phone were still aboard the boat, but physically stood in the way of officers attempting to conduct a search, officials said. Distraught that her daughter had gone missing, Heslop's mother, Brenda Street, flew from the UK to the island after COVID travel restrictions lifted in March of 2022 to look for Heslop, while imploring local authorities to mount a thorough investigation. Yet, 2 years later, no clues have been found, and the mystery of what happened to Heslop was only deepened. David Johnston, a British private investigator working pro bono for Heslop's family, believes that crucial evidence may have been destroyed when Bain, who has returned to the U.S. mainland and has never been charged with a crime in connection with Heslop's disappearance, sailed the Siren Song to a neighboring island and allegedly had portions of the cabin, including the freezer, refitted for selling the vessel, which has since been renamed to a new owner. Deep down in my heart, I know we'll probably never find Sarm, Street, who's 67, says of her daughter. Closure for me would be to find out what happened to her and who was responsible. Among her friends and family, Heslop was known for her infectious love of life and desire to roam. Born in Hertfordshire, England, to Street and Peter Heslop, she worked for years as an airline flight attendant after graduating from college. Heslop quit her job in 2016 and moved to the port of Gibraltar, marking her 40th birthday by crossing the Atlantic on a months-long sailing trip to the Caribbean, ending up in Grenada in 2020. While there, she met Bain, a yacht captain, on the dating app Tinder, and began what appeared to be a happy relationship. Ultimately, Sarm wanted to keep going and having fun in life, says Vernilla. She wanted a partner that she could do all these adventures with. After a trip home to see her family at the end of 2020, Heslop joined Bain the following Valentine's Day in St. John, with plans to work with him operating high-end cruises aboard his $632,000 yacht. Less than a month later, her friends suspected foul play when they heard Heslop had disappeared from Siren Song. A strong swimmer, she could easily have made it a short distance to shore that calm early morning, they say. Plus, she was known for meticulously planning every aspect of her life, making them doubt that she would have intentionally left the boat without her ID and phone. If she knew she was going to make a roast on Sunday, she'd start getting the pots and pans out on Friday, says Vernilla. Within days, in Melbourne, Florida, Bain's ex-wife, Corey Stevenson, who is 46, heard about Heslop's disappearance on TV. Stevenson says she immediately informed police in St. John of the physical assault she had suffered at the yacht captain's hand. Bain was convicted of assault and battery and sentenced to 31 days after a 2011 attack that left Stevenson with a broken tooth. "I was on the phone before the show was even over," says Stevenson. Speaking on behalf of Bain, now a pilot living in Michigan, attorney David Caddy says there's no evidence that Bain had any involvement in Heslop's disappearance. The people who were interviewed that saw them together that day said they were getting along and enjoying each other's company, says Caddy. There's not a single person that has ever indicated in any way that Ryan mistreated Sarm. A spokesperson for the U.S. Virgin Islands Police Department says they continue to investigate the case and are working with the island's attorney general. Eager to get answers, Heslop's friend Zan Lothar, who's 41, manages the awareness campaign FindSarm.com. She and others often gather at the Southampton, UK waterfront once frequented by Heslop. Sitting on a bench dedicated in her name, they exchange news and memories of their missing friend. "We visit whenever we can," says Lothar. "It's a nice place to reflect and to speak to Sarm." And for a People's Scoop, all the news and buzz in Hollywood, Morgan Wallen arrested on felony charges in Nashville. Morgan Wallen is facing new legal troubles. The country star, who is 30, was arrested on 3 felony charges in Nashville after he allegedly threw a chair off the roof of a 6-story bar on Broadway on April 7th. According to a post by Metro Nashville Police on X, two officers standing in front of Eric Church's newly opened Chief's Bar watched the chair fall from the rooftop to the street level. Wallen was charged with 3 counts of reckless endangerment and disorderly conduct, and his bond was set at $15,250. Court records show that Wallen, who was arrested in 2020 on public intoxication and disorderly conduct charges that were later dropped, is due in court on Nashville on May 3rd. Wallen's attorney, Warwick Robinson, tells People his client is cooperating fully with authorities after the incident. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Mickey Cooney with People Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Until next time.